evening. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. This is Friday, February 23rd, 1977, and it's tape number 377. Last week I mentioned briefly an article about the revolt in Iran, the blood feud between Khomeini and the family of the Shah of Iran. I didn't go too much into the details of the feud. I might do that at another time. But I mentioned that article that referred to the use of tape cassettes, that the thousands of tape cassettes made by Khomeini were sent in Lebanon and Libya and shipped to Iran. And these cassettes bridged the gap of all kinds of people who are against the Shah, the middle class and the Marxist, and even way up into the upper class. There are many families I know of personally, members of those families who were against the Shah and the Savak, but just didn't want to be gunned down, didn't have the guts to be gunned down by the Savak, and now they're marching on the streets and demonstrating with Khomeini, and the tape cassettes were the weapon that pulled that off successfully. After I made the tape last week, there was an article in the San Francisco Examiner, "The Silent Force Behind the Iran Rebels, the Scholar Who Modernized Islam." And it's the story of a gentleman who was educated at San Francisco State University, Mr. Shariati, who died when he was 43 years old in 1977. And this article is from the Knight News Service. "The revolution in Iran was nurtured on American campuses where thousands of young Iranians learned of Ali Shariati. For the most part, he taught things outside his homeland. He collected books and he lectured. And his lectures were forbidden in Iran. If one of his books was found in a home, you could go to jail for 3 years. And in the United States, the students could read everything." And they didn't think of Iran as necessarily a religious city. The U.S. Embassy didn't. This article goes on to explain. But that this man wrote about moral forces and the westernization that was eroding the moral worth of Islam, and what we were doing to that country when the CIA took over. And Shariati made tape cassettes. This article says that his teachings were banned, and they spread within Iran secretly and slowly. Books could be obtained in bazaars and passed from one to the other, but the tape cassettes of Shariati lecturing were obtained too, and they were hidden in secret compartments built in the homes of Iranians for just such purposes, and the banned books were memorized, parts of them, and his works were passed on orally to others. Shariati was very important, this article says. It was written by Dave Bolt. "He joined together the philosophy of religion and politics and took the superstition out of religion. And he was arrested by the Shah, and he escaped and went to England. In 1972, the Shah's police placed Shariati under house arrest." He'd gone back to Iran from San Francisco State. "He escaped when he went into hiding in Iran for a year. Then he gave himself up because the police were going to arrest his father. They took him as a hostage. Then Shariati again escaped and went to London. We had a secret location. And he asked for his wife and his two daughters to join him in exile. And the authorities said that the passport would be denied his wife, but his two daughters could go to London, and he went out of hiding to meet his daughters at the airport, and the next day he was dead. The article says that he was in excellent health, and the death has been called a murder." Of course, a murder. But the point is that his life lives on through his cassettes and through the effort he did to get rid of the Savak and get rid of the Shah. And of course, I am impressed with that, because that is about the only weapon we have to fight this insane war that is building up inside the United States to force other countries to fight each other off, such as England and the United States did, setting up France and Germany to fight each other, and we're setting up Russia and China to fight each other, and sending China into Vietnam and making this whole globe go crazy. And the only way that you can stop this warfare state, which Fred Cook wrote about, the warfare state, which it is, and which General Eisenhower warned us about when he went out of office, and President Truman had called the CIA the Gestapo, I'm absolutely convinced that the escalation that I feared 15 years ago when I started my research into the Kennedy assassination is going much too fast for any of you to even grasp or realize, or maybe you're catching on now to what is happening. And the only way to oppose this kind of force, because we don't have the weapons and the satellites, is through information. You can take these tapes and copy them. I mentioned that last week, and pass them around. People are looking for answers. I don't claim to know all of the answers, but I think I've studied all of the various actors on this stage, just as people have studied the 37 plays of Shakespeare and know all those characters. I think I know the moving forces of who's doing the pushing and shoving, and I know the punchline. I've seen enough of the plays to know pretty much how this one's going to go and pretty much how it's going to end if we don't take it seriously. And that's why my record is on tape and reels for the past 8 years, and it will go on as long as I live, and then after I die, it'll go on to other people, and these tapes can last forever. You can make as many copies as you want and put them away and play them back, and they are the pieces to the puzzle of the current era of what's happened since World War I. We jump around a lot, but the overriding theme always of dialogue conspiracy and the World Watchers is that people are murdered in order that other persons may attain power or take over power, and the purpose of the power is to get into a total conflict of war to wipe out the Soviet Union and reclaim the oil and the minerals of Siberia as ours on the excuse that we're saving the world from communism. The Washington Post had a long article last week, February the 11th, on it's on the use of tape cassettes and network, and it's called Against the Grain by William Grider. And it says, the new video cassettes and disc players will free us from the tyranny of network programming. And this has to do with doing away with advertising and all the bad information that is going over television. But the same cassettes, without watching the visual plays, they give examples of seeing movies like Hamlet or La Boheme. The same principle of cassettes is written up in this article. It says, serious people, the ones who talk about under little dark clouds worrying about the energy crisis or the future of Western democracy, should pay more attention to our new toys. Serious people, if they think about toys at all, are mildly embarrassed by the ridiculous gadgets that the rest of us love to buy. But it goes on to say, America has a tool for cultural revolution, and we are using a democratic toy which could liberate us all. It will invigorate the meaning of free speech in America and retard our drift toward centralized mind control imagined in Orwell's 1984. I'm talking about the video cassette recorder, the new home video machines, and this is a long article about video recorders. Now take this principle farther and say, I don't want to view Shakespeare's Hamlet. It's too far off. What is happening now? You take these tapes, as many people do. There's many young groups around the country who take these tapes and chip in. They can't afford the series by themselves and are having discussions, and that's what you should be doing. This article talks about Book of the Month Club TV programming, selling TV. I saw, I think it was at Macy's, The King and I, a videotape. But you can have a series of the month or month tapes going out of the dialogue conspiracy, the World Watchers tapes, and the principle here is the same. Turn off the tube and think for yourself. Don't take the advertising, don't take the cheap shows, the jumping ridiculous programming that is on the, what do they call it now? I can't even think of it, trying to show women bouncing around and the selling of drugs and cosmetics and tobacco and coffee, and turn the tube off and just deny it. Write to the people who sponsor the shows and say, we don't want it. We are taking Mae Brussels tapes for the news. You can write to the sponsors of Cronkite and these various programs and say, we don't want your programs anymore. We're going to subscribe to tapes, and we're going to pass these tapes along and get a different view of what's going on in the world. I just tremble when I read some of the news of the week. This past week, the Washington Post has an article, Thinking the Unthinkable, the U.S. Eyes Bombing Russia Without Wiping It Out. This is by Walter Pincus. The Pentagon is paying a California research company, of course the California company that will put in your Ronald Reagan and has eliminated Rockefeller's candidates of Carter and Ford, the same California companies that have put in this warfare machine and Richard Nixon earlier. The California company is determining the nuclear weapon employment strategy to eliminate the Soviet Union as a national entity. Defense Department documents also show that in Vienna, Virginia, another Pentagon company is being financed to look into the viability of employing strategic nuclear weapons to achieve regionalization of the Soviet Union. They are making plans for targeting against Soviet leadership. Three long-term Pentagon-financed research projects are among dozens of studies last year done by the White House and Defense Department of targeting the forces using 8,000 warheads that will grow to 12,000 by the late 1980s. They want a blue sky research that represents a significant change in the way the U.S. government looks at nuclear weapons and nuclear wars. The Defense Department wants to figure out whether they should flatten Russian industry, what are our real objectives. They spent $78,000 in 1979 as a contract with the Analytical Assessment Corporation of Marina del Rey in California, thinking behind the new research, the ANASMC, the nickname for it, the idea that they would eliminate Soviet Union. They're asking, should we eliminate Russia? Should we have a strategy to end Russia as a national entity? And they're asking, is it possible? They're using physicists, economists, mathematicians. Maybe it would be 100 million people. It would not be total destruction. Their economy does survive, although transportation and communications may not. And they're looking in the idea whether they should keep the Soviet state alive, what targets they should get, or should they end the Soviet state's existence. If we plan to win, we want them to be able to recover a little bit, and we will put them back on their feet. That would be the U.S. burden. If it's something less than wiping them out totally, but put them back on their feet. They wouldn't wipe them out completely because they want the oils and the minerals and the riches that the Soviet Union has and that are in Siberia. But this is what is being studied. This is where the budget is going. And these people are out of control and they are totally insane. Mr. Goldwater, Senator Barry Goldwater in Arizona, was saying U.S. may be near war. He's a ranking member of the Intelligence Subcommittee of the Armed Forces Committee, and he's talking about going to war. And I'll do more about Mr. Goldwater further along in this tape. The Washington Post has a full-page article last week, China Policy, a born-again Brzezinski, and the article's by Martin Schramm. The eyes sparkle with excitement. Even days later, his sweeping arms gesture, Mr. Brzezinski says, it's amazing when you think of it, the leader of a billion people having dinner in my house just 2 days after he arrived in this country. The Washington Post has given it a full-page story and a front-page statement, and you can look it up for yourselves in the library if you want. He is so happy about setting up the meeting of Mr. Tong, who was bullying against Russia, and that's why we have Polish Brzezinski, head of our National Security Council, a Pole who wants to avenge his country that had many, many gas chambers and concentration camps. The Germans didn't put the extermination camps on their soil. They were all done in Poland. And the Polish people had been brutally cruel to the Jewish community for years with anti-Semitism. But the extermination centers were in Poland, and our Polish head of the National Security Council is delighted to make China, have China make war against, go into Vietnam, provoke Russia, make war with Russia. That's why he's here. He's earning his money. I've done many, many tapes, not exclusively on Brzezinski, but taken pot shots here and there. If I did one whole tape on him, I think I'd vomit. But he takes credit for what went on in this country with Mr. Tong visiting. That was his baby. He cooked it up. Then that man goes back with the authority to go on in and take over Southeast Asia and begin to punish the Vietnamese and provoke the Russians any way that he sees fit. That's Brzezinski running this country, not Americans that have been educated in democracy or any other way of living except the warfare state. This whole generation has been ruled by people whose sole intent is to make war all around the world and feed arms to every country that we can to keep the economy boosted by making weapons and sit back and laugh and watch them knock each other off. Russell Baker had an article this week in the newspaper that talking tough isn't always the way to win. And he says the people around Jimmy Carter are egging him on. They're calling him a sissy, that they want him to show his manhood. And yet Russell Baker uses the example of Pol Pot in Cambodia, Indira Gandhi in India, Richard Nixon, John Mitchell, Haldeman, John Ehrlichman, tough guys and gals that tempt history and play nasty jokes. And he goes into the Shah of Iran and Lyndon Johnson, who played the tough guy in Vietnam and then went mad, went down to his ranch, and tough guy collapsed. And he goes into the role of Nixon's resignation, Johnson's abandonment of the president, and the Shah in hiding. And he says, the tough guys don't always win. They're goading Jimmy Carter on because there's an election coming up. Be tough to these people. And what Russell Baker is saying in his article is the world is not always to the tough, Jimmy. You don't have to show your manhood by going behind your Mr. Brzezinski. And even your training at Annapolis, you know, in the atomic submarine division, doesn't mean you're going to come up the winner next time. And I think we have to learn something about the softness of life and the way you win friends and the way you keep friends. And the toughies are losing, and they'll keep trying until they're backed up against a wall or kill all of us with their chemicals and their radiations. But they just simply have to be in the saddle running, and they're going to be there as long as you let them. And when you get on the streets and protest what they're doing here, like we protested in the 60s against Vietnam, they'll know how we feel. But there's going to be a point where we're going to have to go out in the streets and scream and yell, we've had enough. I've had enough for a long time, but the word has to get around. People really don't realize how serious it is that a man, say, as Machiavellian as Rockefeller, as horrible as Nelson Rockefeller, what he did to Chile and Attica and all these various countries, overthrowing them and approving of the CIA espionage plans to overthrow countries for profits of banking and whatever. Even he had people like Ford and Carter as his nominees, and you really don't know what it's going to be like. Maybe next week I'll do one tape on the California violences to review what it was like with Ronald Reagan as governor. There was an article last week in the Hollywood Press. I'm just going to do several mentions on Rockefeller this week. I'm not going to do the fourth part on the Rockefeller story till next week because I want to update you on some other news stories. But Greg Roberts has an article on Rockefeller's death stirs memories of Jonestown death threats. And this was in the Hollywood Press. Greg Roberts wrote that Nelson Rockefeller, whose name is among many conspiracy theories linked to the conspiracy theories, which I have given on past tapes as motives for his being killed, and one time Undersecretary for State of Latin American Affairs, died in good health with no heart trouble, and it stirs memories of Jonestown and reports that hit squads with guns or drugs or poisons could go after a number of celebrated public officials, as well as defectors from the notorious cult. And this article goes on to say that while the press told us there was no indication in a foul play in Nelson Rockefeller's death, there's certainly questions about Andrew Hoffman, the bodyguard, and a Secret Service agent who was outside on the street. Last week I talked about the walkie-talkie out on the street. Greg Roberts has written that a man identified himself as a Secret Service agent, and all he said when they came in is, "We have an unconscious patient inside." Remember when the ambulance was called that Poncheta Pierce didn't say it was Nelson Rockefeller, even though Megan Marshank called Poncheta and said Nelson Rockefeller is downstairs with a heart attack. She identified the condition and the name of the man. And then that woman comes down and says there's a heart case here, send an ambulance, and a Secret Service man outside with that walkie-talkie said, "We've got an unconscious patient here." Greg Roberts wrote that the New York offices of the FBI and the U.S. Secret Services have taken some look at the possibility of foul play in connection with Rockefeller's death. Washington, D.C. headquarters and the New York offices of the FBI and Secret Service have taken a look at the possibility of foul death in the connection with Nelson Rockefeller. The New York City Police and the Emergency Medical Services Department have been doing their jobs But the federal agencies and the Rockefeller families so far have been lagging their feet. And it goes on to say that the Jonestown suggested that leaders would be killed, maybe if they didn't go along or if they knew too much, would be killed by cyanide is interesting, because I did mention my motive several weeks ago that his Venezuela property and his holdings in Venezuela may have been used by one of those banks that Jim Jones used in Venezuela, and they were walking distance from Jonestown to Venezuela. That was one of the connections of Rockefeller to Venezuela that possibly could be one of the motives for erasing him just at this time. I know that it's good to have him out of the way for certain Republicans for the 1980 nominations, but was there any link of Nelson Rockefeller to Jonestown? Since last week's tape, I got an article from one of the listeners in New York. I'm getting wonderful articles. Thank you very much for sending these. We have a news blackout here. The New York Post, February the 13th, has an article about Megan Marshak, and it says she was engaged to a man for 3 years by the name of David Lustig, who came from California. He works for the Valley News, and he worked for Nelson Rockefeller from 1977 to 1978. Marshak was engaged to David Lustig for 3 years, but she went to work for Nelson Rockefeller, but she got an assignment for her former fiancé with Rockefeller, and she got a job for him as a photographer. She was a researcher for Rockefeller, and she got a job for her friend David Lustig at the home of Nelson Rockefeller, where he was supposed to be photographing art objects at the estate of Nelson Rockefeller for a year. He worked for Lustig, worked at the Pocantico Hills home, that estate, for 9 months. He traveled to Rockefeller's Venezuela ranch, where he was allegedly photographing thousands and thousands of family possessions, from silver to china to art to furniture, for an inventory. That's very interesting. I would like to see those photographs. I know that Adolf Hitler photographed every experimentation and every program he had going. And this gentleman that was engaged to Megan Marshak for 3 years was at the Rockefeller estate in New York City, upstate New York, photographing every object the family had, and then was down in Venezuela. He worked for him until 1978. It would be interesting to know, as I say, how close the Rockefeller estate in Venezuela is to Jonestown. If the money invested in the banks in Venezuela from Jim Jones had anything to do with the Chase Manhattan investments, it would be interesting to know about more about David Lustig. I think of runs a Daniel Ludwig down in Brazil, which isn't far away. David Lustig, where he comes from. He's now in California working for a newspaper office, the Valley News in California, San Fernando Valley, where Megan came from. And I think more has to be done about this particular person and the research into their background. David Marks, who just wrote a book on mind control and the CIA, the search for the Manchurian candidate, was saying on a talk show in San Francisco, and I'm sure it's in its book, that the CIA experimented on sex of agents with persons that they had sex to see what time they would talk the most and when they were more responsive to reveal information. And the women, the CIA women, were trained, carefully trained, and put to work to have sex with these particular persons. And they were given $100 a day, or over $100 a day, and had this training. Now, I'm not saying this is true, but I'm asking, again, the unthinkable. Megan Marshak worked in Van Nuys, California. Her father worked in aerospace and was fired at the time that Richard Nixon's war scaled down. He was given a notice and he was fired. She was very bitter that her father wasn't working in defense and aerospace industry. It reminds me of Lawrence Layton, whose father worked for the germ control, chemical, biological warfare in Utah, and Terry Buford, whose father's in Navy intelligence. Here's a woman assigned to Nelson Rockefeller. She's with the Associated Press for 6 months, just 6 months in Washington, and she's with the Presidential Press Corps out in California. She was down at San Clemente. She covered the press work of Sarah Jane Moore in San Francisco as a stringer, which was, again, a job done by the California politicians. And Sarah Jane Moore has close links to the very strong conservative Regan, Holmes Tuttle Group down in Los Angeles, the politicians. Her husband's real name is not revealed to us. The woman who's been charged with attempting to murder Gerald Ford, which she was proud to do, which again would have made Regan the nominee or the president if he had gotten in, certainly the nominee and probably the president. This woman was carrying the Sarah Jane Moore story. She was down at San Clemente. She goes to Washington 6 months, and then we're supposed to believe that the way she got to work for the Vice President of the United States, who was then heading, just completed his job on the CIA and the assassination of foreign leaders, his committee, with all of the fingers that he has in the pie, we're supposed to believe that she took a package of Oreo cookies and wrapped each one individually and gave it to the man who has everything else in the world, and he was so entranced by individually wrapped Oreo cookies that Nelson Rockefeller then took her to New York City with him, where she was given over $100 a day and $60,000 a year, plus all expenses and charge accounts that we talked about last week. This really stretches the imagination to ask, is this woman one of those trainees that David Marks was talking about, that when she switched from her $214 a week job to over $100 a day, were the taxpayers paying that? When he was Vice President Rockefeller and she was working for him at over $100 a day, were we paying her salary like we pay the salary of the CIA women that went to bed with men to get the secrets of them before, after, or doing sex? Was she one of them that the taxpayers paid? Meghan Marshak, remember, waited till he was cold dead before anybody came to pick up that body, and they referred to her as a mystery woman. And we went into this for several weeks. I won't do more. But in lieu of the Marx book of the salaries of the females and how they're trained and the mystery of Mr. Lustig, her fiancé, that she got to work for Rockefeller down in Venezuela, and the Venezuela connections to Jonestown, we just have to keep asking these questions. I think I have the answers, but I'll ask them in terms of questions and just stimulate your gray matter and let you think whatever you want about them. And to complete this side one of this tape, I'll ask you some more questions on the matter. A newspaper article this week, the Associated Press, refers to the money that was taken at the Kennedy Airport, the Lufthansa that came in to New York City on December the 11th. And one of the suspects in this case of a $5.8 million robbery of the Lufthansa German Airlines cargo at Kennedy Airport, one of the suspects, they're saying now, as of this week, may have been killed. DeSimone's wife filed a missing persons report January the 14th. The burglary of the $800,000 in jewelry and $5 million in cash took place December the 11th. By January the 14th, a missing persons report was filed by the wife of one of the persons who they believe has the $5 million and $800,000 in jewelry. The Lufthansa's cargo traffic division was held a material witness in the case. They have a particular witness, Mr. Peter Grunewald, Seppi and Peter Grunewald of Levittown, New York. They were arrested, these two, as employees of the Lufthansa Cargo Traffic Division. But it was said in the AP Wire Service, it said that they are held as witnesses because it was learned that they were planning to leave for South America. The missing money in small denominations of old U.S. currency had been sent by the Commerzbank of West Germany versus the Lufthansa to Chase Manhattan Bank here. Now, down at Jonestown, we have Mrs. Layton, who had money coming in from Germany for Jim Jones. And even when she was dead for a couple of months, there was a fund of money coming in from her father and another source funding the Jonestown operation. Here is money coming in from Germany to South America through Chase Manhattan Bank. I wonder which countries in South America this was going to, because Jim Jones had weapons and they had drugs and it was a place of mind experimentation. They used hospitals in Venezuela. And these are questions that, along my list of motives, where I could think of 13 reasons why John Kennedy was killed or 13 reasons why Nelson Rockefeller was killed, I think this article this week that this particular party is missing, and the airplane, the money was missing in December. This particular gentleman was missing January the 14th. The money was to go through Chase Manhattan Bank from Germany down to South America, and then January 26th, Nelson Rockefeller was dead. Are there connections? We don't know. We have countries, we have banks, we have corpses, but we can't lose hold of those.